Good morning, everybody. What just happened? I've heard that phrase used at different times when people are either puzzled or exasperated or don't know what to make of some event in life. When you think of it and when you use the phrase and think about us and just this last moment, what just happened? The answer is that we just have been involved in a renewal of covenant with the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. We have just taken a moment in a very simple way to remember the one who gave himself for us and who said on that night when he was to be arrested and the night before he gave himself for us, when he took that cup, "This is my blood in the new covenant, which is poured out for many for forgiveness of sins." My blood of the new covenant. That phrase brought to mind the whole background of God's dealings with mankind, where when he first brought Israel out of their slavery and bondage in Egypt and brought them to Mount Sinai and offered them the opportunity to be his people and for him to be their God, and they agreed. They committed themselves to that. Then he made the terms of his covenant known. And then he met on the mountain, him coming down in awesome glory before them. And they offered sacrifices and sprinkled the book and sprinkled the altar. And then they ate and drank before the Lord. And they celebrated the covenant. Now, In our present time, since the blood of the new covenant has been offered, disciples recommit themselves to that when they come together, when we come together on the Lord's Day to break bread. That's Acts 20 and verse 7 mentions it that way. Here is a passage in which the second generation of Israel was doing sort of what we have done today. Remember, this is almost 40 years into their time after they had entered into that covenant with God at Mount Sinai. It had been a terrible 40 years in many ways as they wandered around and waited and looked forward to going home and looked forward to entering the land that God promised to them. And before they did, this is right before they did, and this is a part of a speech, one of the three speeches that Moses made to them, and he calls his people to renew that covenant. When they crossed the river, he told them, God wanted them to take up large stones and to plaster those stones and go to a valley that was about 40 miles north of where Jerusalem is now and about 20 miles across the river into the promised land. And he wanted them to put those stones up on both sides and to write the covenant, the words of the covenant, and then for all of them to find themselves in between and to eat and to drink there before God and to rejoice before him, and then to enter, to renew, to commit themselves and their generation to that covenant relation to God. And what that meant is realizing that they were his treasured people. Our goal over these Lord's days is going to be to get ourselves past the temptation of our world and thinking of ourselves as isolated, unimportant, and passing individuals, and to see ourselves as the object of God's special compassion and interest and concern as a people. The studies will be unrelated in every way except just that one idea. And this is an idea that deserves our thought and attention. Here's the passage. Deuteronomy 26 at verse 16. This is a speech that started back in chapter 12, actually, of this book. This day, the Lord your God commands you to do these statutes and ordinances. You shall therefore be careful to do them with all your heart and with all your soul. You have declared today that the Lord is your God, and that you will walk in His ways and keep His statutes and His commandments and His ordinances, and will listen to His voice or obey His voice. And the Lord has declared today that you are a people for His treasured possessions, as He promised you. And that you are to keep all His commandments, and that He will set you in praise and in fame and in honor above all the nations that He has made, and that you shall be a people holy to the Lord your God, as He promised. There's a connection between that reading and us that we'll come to presently. But just imagine in your mind what is being said here and the meaning, the profound meaning of it. This day, he says, something is happening between the Lord your God and you. This day, now think of us here on the first day of the week, the day God raised up His Son from the dead, and what we've done in remembering Him today. And think of this relation between our God and us, the Lord and us, the Lord and His people. Notice that everything else that takes place here then takes place in view of this continuing context of responsive relationship. Here in Deuteronomy 26, there is a gift that God gives them. It's going to be the fruit of the harvest, the fruit of the ground in verse 2, and then the response that people make. Much like God gave us a gift in His Son. He's given us, as Jerry mentioned in prayer a while ago, so much more, and we're responding to that today. And in this passage, there are the promises that God makes, and then the glad acceptance of them on the behalf of His people who are moved along by His promises. And then there is, in verse 16, the idea, the Lord your God commands you to do, and then you shall therefore be careful to do. That makes sense, doesn't it? That goes with a New Testament idea, like in Romans 10, if I believe in my heart that Jesus is Lord, or that God raised Him from the dead, I confess with my mouth that He is Lord, then it makes sense that I'm going to want to conduct myself in keeping with His guidance and with His will. That's what relationship means and involves, where one is a great, great king and the others are the citizens of His kingdom. And then notice that it said, do them with all your heart and with all of your soul. Just like we've sung a moment ago. With all your heart and with all of your soul is important in Deuteronomy. In chapter 4 and verse 29, this is the way God's people search after Him or seek Him. We often talk about seeking the Lord first. We're seeking Him with all of our heart and with all of our soul. In chapter 6 and verse 5, which we have sung, this is the way we go about trying to do what He's called us to do. We love Him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. The New Testament doesn't change the nature of covenant love. It guides it further. Jesus said three times in John 14, that farewell address, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. It wasn't a command to do so. It was a statement of nature. This is fitting. This is the way things work. 1 John 5 in verse 3 says, this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not grievous. They're not a burden to us. They're what we want to do because of relation to the Lord and because of the covenant standing that we have with Him. Remember that a covenant was a relation which was very, very much more loving and affectionate than a contract or a deal. But it was also very much more binding and accountable than simply a relationship or that kind of thing. In this passage, what's being said is, your God, with whom you have covenant relation now, is the great King who offers a treaty, so to speak, with a people who would be helpless without His care. He is a great King who is wise and powerful and unchanging and present and knowledgeable, but He's also merciful and gracious and slow to anger and ready to pardon and abundant in goodness and truth, forgiving and just. What a privilege it would be to enter that kind of binding relation with Him. And so that's what this passage next says has happened or is happening when we renew covenant with God. You have declared today, he says in verse 17. And it's interesting, he spells this out. The word declared, I noticed, is translated in different ways because it's more than just saying something. It's almost like a legal term. The Old American Standard Version translates it, you have avouched today. I don't use avouched much. Another newer translation says, today you have obtained the agreement of the Lord to be your God. This isn't, in other words, this is a kind of a formal, real, actual thing that happened. You have declared today that the Lord, and I want to, the Lord, if you don't know, that the Lord is your God, show it to us. If you don't know, in the English versions, when you find the Lord like this in capitals, it's not a translation. It is a way of representing the memorial name of God, which is His great I Am, His eternal being, you'll find it if efforts to translate it Yahweh or Jehovah. This is the living God. And the way to read this is, you have declared today that the Lord is your God. He's not like one of the gods that the Egyptians had, or one of the gods, small g's, that the Canaanites have. The living God, the good God, the faithful God is your God. You have a special relation to Him. That's what he's saying. And then it says, you have declared today that you will walk in His ways. That the fact that He is your God is going to define how you go about living in your individual life, in your family life, in your community life, all of which Deuteronomy speaks to one way or another. And I suggest if you read this book and you find the odd things, just assume that they're talking about the contrast between the idols of the land that the people were about to enter. The New Testament also shows that where the Lord is our God, walking in His ways is the natural consequence of that. You guys who are reading about the new life in your class this summer in Ephesians, we'll find in Ephesians 5 where it'll say, walk in love, walk in light, walk in wisdom. You know what that's saying? You've declared that you'll walk in His ways. You're going to be like Him. You're going to take your cues about what's appropriate from Him. You're going to be fashioned by walking in His footsteps. That's the idea. In our terms, we want to be like Jesus. That's what we confess when we say Jesus is Lord. Third, you have declared today that you will hear His voice. I've adapted the phraseology only in a small way from the ESV where it said, we'll obey His voice. Some of the other translations will say, you will hearken to His voice, or you'll listen to His voice. To me, the meaning is deeper than just, I'll do what He says. I've noticed that at times, like with our, in raising my children, all except Carrie, of course, in raising my children, there were times when the boys would be like, well, I'll do it, but I don't understand it, and I don't like it. I had their obedience, but not necessarily their hearts. And I've noticed sometimes with God, it's possible for people to be that way. It'll be like, does that make any sense to you? Do you have any idea why we'd do this? Why would anybody? But I will. You know, that kind of thing. There's a passage in Hebrews 10 which takes another passage and applies it to Jesus, Psalm 40, where it says, you've prepared me a body, and some of the other possibility is, more literally, you've dug me an ear where I hear your will, where I delight to do your will. That's the idea here. We're going to listen. We're going to hear. We can walk outside on our back porch and Kay can say, can you hear that wren? Or can you hear that mockingbird? I hear birds whistling, but I'm not sure which ones all the time. She is. She can hear that. And if we could get to the place where we can hear the heart of our God, where we've declared today that this week, we're going to be in tune with Him. We're going to listen to Him in that way. That's what you've declared. Now look at what the Lord has declared. It goes ahead to say in verses 18 and 19, the Lord has declared today. Did you hear Him while we observe the Lord's Supper and then sang, hear, O spiritual Israel, the Lord our God is one God. You shall love Him with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Did you hear what was happening? The Lord was saying, you are a people for my treasured possession. Look at verse 18 there. That's what it said. The Lord has declared today that you are a people for His own, for His treasured possession, as He promised you. Look at that little phrase, His treasured possession. Over in Malachi 3 and verse 17, it is translated His jewels. Jason, do you feel like you're one of the Lord's jewels? This is one of the little ones mentioned a jewelry box. Well, look around. That's what we see around here. And it springs from this idea, which has been exceedingly hard to translate, I notice. The phrase, His treasured possession, is from a word that it's been translated, His peculiar people. I've heard misplaced studies on that, suggesting that we're different. We do think, well, that may be true, but not in this sense here. Peculiar people, a people for His own possession, a people of His own special people, a people for His very own. Those are all efforts to translate this one word. And the word means that which is one's own, that which belongs to one's own possession, chosen, special, one's own property. That's the idea in this word. William Woodson, who taught at Lipscomb for a long time, I read one time where he tried to illustrate the meaning of this term. He said, think for a moment carefully what one person in your life do you love most devotedly? What one person? You got to narrow it down to one person. All right, now, what one word would you use to express what you hold dear and best about that person? What one word? That'd be hard to do, wouldn't it? Just one word about the dearest person in your life. And then Brother Woodson said, that's what God does with this word, His treasured possession, all one word in the original. That's what God does. He puts into words His special love for and His bond with His people. You regular people who've just been trampling through the awful wilderness for 40 years, whose parents and grandparents fell in the wilderness, are His treasured possession. That's what this says. In the New Testament, in 1 Peter 2 and verse 9, this exact same idea is used to say who those of us who have been redeemed by the blood of Christ and born into His family are. You guys know this, but you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for His own possession. You see that? The same idea is fulfilled ultimately in the Lord's people whom He purchases through the blood of His own Son and establish a covenant with Him. Second, the Lord has declared today that you are to keep all His commands. Now, this is not just a restatement of what was just said in verse 16. It's not just another burden laid on. The implication of this, if you think about it, is God is declaring today that He's willing to make Himself known to you. God has declared today that He wants His heart to be understood by you. God is declaring today and taking responsibility today for you. If you will walk in His ways and listen to Him, then how your life turns out is His responsibility. He's taking ownership in this statement here. Third, the Lord has declared today that He will set you in praise and fame and honor above all. Above all nations that He has made. All the rest of them He owns too, but He owns His people in a special way, His special possession. Now this gets applied in an interesting way in Scripture. In Psalm 135 in verses 10 through 14, it goes back, it thinks back to the two kings that old Balaam dealt with in Numbers chapters 23 and 24. And it's used to prove there that God will vindicate His people and He will have compassion on His people, verse 14, so that His own glory may be known. See, over in 1 Peter 2 and verse 9, after it says, a people for His own possession, it gives a reason, that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. I went back this week and read with a smile what this meant while Balaam was trying to curse God's own special possession. Remember that story? Barak hires him to come and place a curse on them, Balak, that is. And I want to read you selected verses from Balaam's four efforts at it, his oracles. First one, he has blessed and I cannot revoke it. The Lord their God is with them. Behold, a people, he says. It shall be said of Jacob and Israel, what has God wrought? That's not a very effective curse. That's saying God takes care of their praise and fame and their honor. The second effort that he says, as he speaks of God who hears them, how lovely are your tents, O Jacob, like gardens beside a river, he says. That's how you're like. Blessed are those who bless you, and cursed are those who curse you. And then another one. He says, let the outcome of my life be like his. Then one from Jacob will exercise dominion. All of them are statements of fame and honor and beauty that God grants to his people, and God sees after for his people who are expressions of his glory in his world. That's one of the faith commitments we've made today in renewing covenant with the Lord. And then the Lord has declared today that you will be a people holy to him as he promised. That simply means that you're the apple of his eye. And Zechariah 2 and verse 8 says, whoever touches the apple of his eye touches him. Whoever touches you touches the apple of his eye. He won't put up with it. Deuteronomy 7 had explained this, and as Moses tried to encourage these people, it said, verse 6, for you are a people holy to the Lord. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his treasure. Out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth, it was not because you were more in number than any other people the Lord set his love on. That the Lord set his love on you and chose you, for you were the fewest of all the peoples. But it is because the Lord loves you and is keeping the oath that he swore to your fathers, that the Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord your God is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him. I stopped about halfway through or toward the end of that verse, but you see the idea that a people being holy to the Lord means that they're there because of his choice, because of his oath, because of his faithfulness, because of his love. And that today is what the Lord declares to us in the fullest and most complete way possible, even to the giving of Christ. So let's walk out today from this place with a renewed sense, not of our greatness or goodness or might or power, but that we are his treasured possession, because what God has offered most is a people of his own. A people of his own. When one confesses Christ as Lord and by faith is baptized into his name, he is transferred into the possession of the God who makes up a people for his treasured possession. If you've made that beginning, let's live in keeping with it. If you need to make that beginning, we'd love to help if we can. And you can let us know by coming while we stand and sing.